Blog Talk Radio.
Did it start?
Well,
okay, maybe now Darrell hears me. I hope hundreds of people are listening live. Yes, we're back. Okay.
Okay. That's the VIP bonus content right there.
That's what people come for. All right, here we go. Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. We are going to talk NXT for January 18th, 2022. I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Once again, not a three-man booth this week. Nate, hope everything works out well for you, buddy. But I am here with the other of the usual gang of idiots. So let's talk main event. Let's talk Walter versus Roderick Strong. Just a really, really great main event. I mean, a very, very obvious how this was going to end. I think it was Bruce Lee Hazelwood who mentioned that that Roddy's back on Pro Wrestling Tees. I said that Roddy was purely in the spot where he's just going to job until he's gone. Thinking I was joking, and then Bruce said he was on Pro Wrestling Tees, which seems like kind of a giveaway. So I guess we'll find out. These guys, of course, did have a great violent match. Walter just – he mostly dominates Roddy. Roddy really only gets back into it, usually with a little bit of help from Malcolm Bivens, things like that. So, yeah, it's – you know, it's the match I thought we were going to get, and yet they still made something out of it. This went 12-15. Your winner, Walter, of course, and this goes to what becomes a Pier 6 brawl. Walter and his cronies, Imperium, beat down Roderick Strong, and of course, the save is made by the Creeds. The Creeds scrap with Imperium. So yeah, I guess we don't need to watch the rest of the Dusty Cup. Because they've told us who's winning. Tom, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
Oh, boy, they did the exact same thing with the women as well. The third of three six-person tags that were set up tonight. I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. I have not renamed myself this week like someone else that we are discussing. That seems like the headline is Walter seemingly renaming himself for unspecified reasons at the end there, which commentary just didn't hit at all. Like, Walter seemed like he was totally into it. And Vic Joseph, who had sold a lot of moments that I thought he should have just laid out for earlier or de-emphasized, he just missed it entirely. It's like, hey, that was kind of big while you're signing off. And it's the thing that people are going to be talking about throughout the week leading into the next show. But whatever, I'll on that if somebody asks us about it on the phones, but when we hit the mailbag, because there is a mailbag question it ties in better with. As for this match, I'm not sure I would say great, but the only reason I wouldn't say that is because of the high expectations that you get with these guys that I'm not sure they quite cleared. I'm going to be forgiving, though, of that, because this match was really just thrown out there. They just promoted it a couple days ago on social media, and I don't know. I mean, there is something to surprising people with something like this and not letting us overthink it for too long. So I'll be forgiving of that as well, especially when you've got two established guys, and probably because it was two established guys who are both known for their chops. Another thing that NXT really undersold leading into this, on top of the fact that Roddy is always having, quote, big money matches, because that's Bivens' catchphrase now, but this is the first one that was like, you know, you could actually pass it off that way and it wouldn't sound like an eye roll line, but sure, just go ahead and don't say it this time. Wade Barrett ended up mentioning it on commentary, but Malcolm Bivens did not, as far as I saw. But anyway, for all of what seems like a lost opportunity here to build something, we are looking at two people who seem to be on opposite ends of their NXT USA runs. Yes, Walter has made appearances, but it seems like he's here now and really kicking that off, while Roddy seems like he's at the tail end of it. Could have said that about Roddy at various other stages as well, but here, as you suggested, feels that way more than ever. And I'll hand it to him on top of, you know, just to add another forgiveness cherry on top of all of the little nitpicks I have about this. People in my circles anyway seems to be way more excited about this match than anything on NXT in a long time, no matter what they've named the week's show, or whether it's on Peacock or not. And yeah, again, two long established guys, both known for their chops, so I get it. But it seemed to work. I'll be curious if the ratings, I like me talking about the ratings of NXT, I will be curious this week to see if the ratings get a little bump or if it's just playing to people that were already there. But yeah, I think that covers it. All my other stuff on Walter is that he renamed himself Gunta.
Yeah, So I didn't write that at first in my recap, and I was like, I had to have not heard that right. This cannot be. I didn't go back. I have kind of a pain. Like, I don't know why my app does this, but when I'm watching live, I can't go back. It's a real pain. I have no idea how it does not have this very simple, not new bit of technology going for it, but it doesn't. Yeah, I was like, this can't be. It can't be his name. He cannot be renaming himself. Just a guy who absolutely doesn't need a change and is a very long-established brand in WWE. So it's not like he just showed up and this is like a Kenta Hideo Itami thing. He's been there, and he just changed to another one-word name. But Gunter, he seems like a tubby chocolate-faced kid. Yeah. That's what I think that name is. And some names just have a feeling that they give you, and that's the feeling that this gives me. So I look forward to his Lederhosen next week and the way he's dressed all ready for Oktoberfest. In January, you know, you can do Oktoberfest all year. No one's going to stop you. I might be off the rails, but I just find it. It's like I'm getting hit with this information again that he's called Gunter. And on a show that I thought was very, very enjoyable tonight, I'm just amazed that they just decided to slap me in the junk right at the end and was like, no, you're calling him Gunter now. I don't want to.
I feel like quoting Sergeant Schultz, but people probably don't remember who he is, and I don't want that taken out of context.
I do remember who he is, so I would have been on board, but I might have said, kids, Google that.
Yeah. Context is crucial there, and yep. That also plays into the mailbag question.
It does, indeed. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, or you can call us 515-605-9345. That's your options. That's all of them. A couple people are calling us, and we are going to go to the 814 area code now, and we are going to talk this. I don't want to call it a stuff show because seven matches is kind of the norm now. But the second half of this, they really made hay, whereas the first half, they really took their time with some storylines. But let's go to 814 and say hey. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
You know, before we – Nate's the only one who's really, really good at memorizing the area codes. So he told me last week, and this week I was like, surely I'll remember – for sure that it's Ryan. And before we went on, I said to Tom, is that Ryan? And we're like both Googling Cumberland, Maine area code. We could not figure it out. But we're glad it's you. Well, how did you find this week's show?
It was a fine show. I got some questions about the show. My first question is on Walter. Does he have a gimmick where he picks on the smaller wrestlers? Because I know, like, when he wrestled in NXT UK, he wrestled pretty much the smaller wrestlers, and now he's starting off with someone that's a good bit smaller than him. He never, like, takes on anyone that's his own size, like a Dexter Lumis or a Braun Breaker, or, you know, someone that, you know, that would be in his weight class.
You know, and I think part of that is just knowing a guy's greatest strengths. Yeah, because he had feuds with Tyler Bate and Ilya Dragunov and Pete. So he just matches up with those guys, and being brutish and being a bully, even though that's not necessarily stated in his, you know, it's not stated right now. It was for a while early on in his run in NXT UK. He was very much a bully. They would have him in training sessions backstage with, you know, face unseen wrestlers, because eventually they're going to make it to the roster, and he would just berate them and belittle them and destroy them, kind of a Thatch can thing, but for those who saw that, but much more brutal and mean and relentless. So that is part of what he does, and so they know that's putting their best foot forward. Also, part of it, I think, is just saving the money match for later, because I think ideally you can get a lot out of a Walter and Braun Breaker feud, but hopefully they take their time getting there. I feel like this is a show that will take its time, but yeah, I'm not opposed to seeing Walter decimate some guys that make him look even bigger than he is for a little while, Tom.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you've got a guy the size of Walter, not just the fact that he's 6'4", but also that he's as thick as he is, I guess, for lack of a better term coming to mind, like you can be as tall as him, but you still won't look as big as him unless you look like him. You want to take advantage of the visual of that. And also, when he's going to be wrestling at the top, you want to put him with really talented guys like Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne and Ilya Dragunov. So that just ends up being a little bit of happenstance there to a certain extent, I think.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. My second question is WWE and NXT planning to do like more like babyface against babyface heel against heel matches? Or is it just that the Diamond Mind is turning babyface in this feud?
That's a big question, and one that I intended us. I didn't know how we would happen upon it, but I guess we're getting it out of the way early. Diamond Mind, I guess, could be faces. I think at most at this point they are tweener. They're just kind of presenting them and letting fans decide what they think of them. I think more than any characters on this show, they can kind of get away with it because they're just kind of straightforward badasses. They don't really cheat. Bivens did try a couple of times to get Roddy back into the match, into this main event. But for the most part, they're not doing overly heelish things. They're just tough people doing tough people things. So the bigger question here, of course, is the face-face, heel-heel dynamic. And I think that much like on early NXT, they don't necessarily care about that on a big scale. Right now they're just trying things, throwing things against the wall, seeing what sticks. And if that means that you kind of have someone shift, lean one way or the other for a couple of weeks to see what you've got, That's what NXT is for. You want to find out, you want to have all kinds of stuff to look back on to say, okay, when we bring up LA Knight, do we use him as a face or a heel? I have a strong, strong feeling about that, but we'll get to that. But I think that's just largely what NXT is for. We're going to see, we saw We got Enofe and Blade. They won their match. And they will have the winner. They will face baby faces because it's a face-face match on that side of the bracket. So it doesn't seem like they care as much. And face-face, you usually can get away with a little more than heel-heel because heel-heel kind of saps the ability to create some heat unless somebody's face for a day, which doesn't do them any favors in the long term generally. But I think they just kind of don't care until they get to the main roster, Tom.
Yeah, excellent points, particularly in regards to this is what NXT is for, and I've made that point in the past that it is an opportunity to see maybe people who aren't promo people cutting promos to flex those muscles a little bit and just having evidence as to what is there or isn't. And if it's switching face and heel just for the sake of it to show what's there or to expand the boundaries, then that works too. Tonight, even if undersold, I feel was enough of an attraction match that they easily got away with this on a same night when Ivy Nile wrestled a babyface and the Creeds wrestled the babyfaces. I think the end goal is really just to get the belts on the Creeds, and so it just happens that Imperium are the champions right now.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I have a question on Grayson Waller's bodyguard. I heard he had a dark match last week against Aussie Jones, and I guess won by ref decision. Is there like any? I guess he must have been pretty impressive if they brought him on the TV this week. Any words on how he looked in that match, in the dark match?
Unfortunately, I didn't get to see that. It wasn't supposed to be a dark match. It only became a dark match because Odyssey got injured. But we've seen him before. This is Sarov, who was in Indushare. So it's funny because he showed up. I was like, okay, that's Sarov. And then I said, am I crazy? And I went to Joel Pearl online because he's always on top of who's going to show up and everything and said, okay, who was this? And he did indeed say it's Sarov. I didn't want to be the jerk who thought everybody looked alike. So yes, I just wanted to make sure, but this is Sarov from Indushare, the former partner of Rinku before Rinku ended up moving north and teaming with, is it Shanky? I'm not watching that stuff.
Yeah, that is correct. And now he's had like 3 months straight of Veer is coming to Raw vignettes that don't seem to be going anywhere.
Cool. All right. Well, we've seen that play out before. Emelina. Emelina.
Yeah,
Lars.
I was like, which one do I pull? Yep.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, so where did we start there? With Sarov. So, yes, Sarov also got into a bit of hot water during a takeover where he essentially gave away who was winning a match that he was not involved in. And then he was removed from TV. I was really digging into Cher, but that happened and he got in some trouble. And apparently it's time to finally get him back on television. I would have thought he'd been turfed out before, but that's not what they did with him. Don't know if they're going to name him Sarov now. I would say probably not because the announcers did do the old wrestling trope of pretending not to know who someone is, even though they've seen him up close and personal before on several occasions. So I think they'll call him something. My guess would be they don't have a name yet. Which is why they didn't get it out of the way, but maybe that's just the hook for next week too, Tom.
Yeah, that was the second time that Vic Joseph had done it in the same segment of you know, essentially not technically segment, but the same stretch of television there, because it ended with him going, "I don't know who that man is," and it opened with him going, "Who's that pulling up?" It's like, LA Knight drives the same car every time you see him in the car, in a car, which is frequently. He's probably had that car with him driving it on like 10 episodes minimum. It's LA Knight. What are we getting out of Vic Joseph saying, "I don't know who it is," rather than
for the first time ever, defend Vic Joseph. I give zero F's about cars. So when it pulled up, I genuinely didn't know who it was. I'm surprised to hear I've seen that car. I've seen that car several times because I would never remember a car.
And I'm definitely with you there. I have no idea whether this is a Lambo or a Camaro or a whatever the heck it is. But it is distinctive enough, and we've seen it enough times that I'm like, oh, it's LA. Just what are we getting out of Vic Joseph not knowing that kind of thing? I don't understand that. But other than that, yes, it's Sarov. Yes, he probably will be getting a new name. And I forget the other thing I was going to say, but it's not really important. It really wasn't important because I was wrong about it. I did think that he had been released. Like, if you had asked me, I would have said, oh, yes, 100% he got released. but I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, it seems like they always do him a big I could see one slipping through the cracks, me missing just a single release that wasn't high profile. But most of them have been big groups, and I couldn't remember him being one of those big groups. But since they've gotten rid of, like, 86 people this year, it did occur to me that he was probably one of them. But,
yeah. But here, and I could have sworn that I saw, and this is not me lumping together people who wrestled on the Superstar Spectacle or whatever. This is just the two people on the show tonight that I thought this about. I thought that Guru Raj had been released, and it wasn't like I don't have a distinct memory of learning that about Sarov. He had just been a non-entity for so long. I was like, yeah, they probably let that contract run out. But Guru Raj, I could have sworn I saw his name on one of the release lists, and I had the reaction like, wow, that's surprising because they put him against Finn Balor at the Superstar Spectacle. And I Googled to make sure I was right about that. It just seems like when you do that to open that show that you hope is going to become its own show in a different country, you're giving the spot to a guy you have hopes for. And yet, I mean, how many times have we seen Guru Raj since? One, maybe?
Well, it was just two or three weeks ago we saw him.
Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, he did a job just a couple of weeks ago. Because I had fairly recently typed his name. So I would say maybe the go-home show to New Year's Evil, I suppose.
Oh, which I don't think I was on. And speaking of poor cable services, I not only don't have a go back button, but I just if I miss it, I miss it and it's gone. And then I have to rely on WWE's YouTube channel to catch me up on the shows I can't watch live. So that explains that.
Cool. Ryan, if you have one more, go ahead.
Final question's on Joe Gacy. Do you think him and Harlan can stay together till they get to the main roster? You think they're going to break up before them, because there was a little bit of dissension where Gacy said, I wish we could have been in this tournament, he was sort of lecturing Harlan a little bit tonight.
Thanks, Ryan, as always. I hope that they have the foresight to keep these two guys together for a while. It would not be the first time that Vince or Bruce got an itchy trigger finger and started trying to push the unready monster on their own right away. I think Harlan benefits enormously from having Gacy. Gacy's benefiting from having Harlan, but Harlan is, I think, essentially lost without Gacy right now. So it's very, very important that he's there for him. Whether they can stay together to the main roster will be how they continue to click as a unit. And that'll be even more important when Harlan starts to talk a little bit more, which I assume he will. They don't have to, but I assume he will. So I would say right now, gun to my head, no, they will not go up together as a unit. But if they really start to click, it could be as early as a month or two from now where I say, these guys are a unit. They have to be together, Tom.
Those were my exact same points, just in a slightly different order. So back to you.
Cool. Thanks as always, Ryan. We are going to go to our friend Darrell. Darrell, if you are there, I can hear me being heard by you. So you must be there. So Darrell, how are you?
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Good to hear your voice again. I missed you the last couple times you were on this show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Miss you too. Miss you too, man. Had to call in today after catching the late start to NXT. I'm going to start with the good. What I thought was good, and that was something that y'all touched on, was the introduction and how they tried to bring in LA Knight. And you could tell that these are people who work with Vince who are writing the show, because if they didn't pull everything, every trick out the book, because, you know, he tried to take out the Stone Cold and the Rock a little bit with what he say. But if they didn't pull late 97, late 90, early 97, 98-ish, Rock, Stone Cold entrances and everything with how he came in with the mannerisms of Austin, but trying to be like the Rock with his speech and how he was talking to everybody. Interesting how they're gonna how you're gonna make him a babyface with how they're writing the show and stuff like that. That's not realistic, but I liked it, and I liked what they tried to do and how he tried to structure what he was giving in the story that he was trying to tell, especially with Grayson Waller, and now them adding a heavy to that situation and stuff like that. And then how you, but the only thing that threw me off was how you have the restraining order where you say he can't touch you, but then you add a insurance policy. It don't really click all the way. That would think would be something that you would introduce the insurance policy instead of a restraining order. But what do you guys like about that whole thing?
So in general, I like the pieces of this story. I like that Waller got himself protected. I like that he got a restraining order also. I like how he's ducking his main opponent, Knight, and stalling as long as he can while trying to promote himself as a tough guy. I really like so many parts of this. But we had some real WWE-isms in this, like the restraining order is a trope, but it doesn't, that one doesn't bother me. What bothers me is Knight pointing to the back and saying, well, if I can't, this guy can. And it's just like, but you wouldn't have known that, like, you don't have any relationship with Dexter Lumis. None at all. None that we know about. So, like, what is this? That bugged me. But a lot of what they did, I like. LA Knight as a babyface, we'll see. We'll see. But I saw it on NWA, and I hated it. He was very annoying. But he was also uncontrolled. There was nobody. He'd do his, yeah, and, you know, he did that at the beginning of his talk segment here, and he did it three times. And you might be like, that's one or maybe two too many times. On NWA, he would go to the ring or to the booth, and he would do it, I'm not kidding, 15, 20 times before he started talking. I know you think I'm exaggerating. I am not. He would do it 15 or 20 times before he started talking. And there was one time he was doing it with the crowd at the beginning of a match against the Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis. And he's in there with Malonis, and they haven't locked up yet. And Malonis goes, are you gonna fight, or are you going to play with them? And a bunch of people cheer. And I'm like, hey, Malonis just turned face because Eli was getting so annoying. I think he might have a future as a face because he's got the right brand of annoying that is going to grab a lot of people. I think he's way too valuable as a heel to be wasted as a face. But a face can make the company more money. So I get that too. So if there's anything to latch onto, I'm not mad at them for trying. I really, 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 really hope, though, that when he goes to the main roster, he starts as a heel. Maybe this was bigger and we were asking about all the pieces of this. I thought Waller continued to show that he really gets it here. I like what they're doing with him. Like, he comes out dressed to fight and then is completely cowardly. I like so much of how they are presenting him. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that so far. And whatever limitations he's got, they are kind of hiding. Tom, on the opening segment.
So I would be far more optimistic about Knight as a babyface if I hadn't heard your repeated warnings about how that went in the NWA. And honestly, I'm still kind of optimistic. You cited a lot of the reasons why it could be different this time around, particularly the more controlled environment. But you still have him going up there and saying, yeah, and let me talk to you, in a much more catchphrasy way than we've ever heard him do on NXT television before. Usually those are much, yes, they are catchphrases, but they are much more seamlessly plugged in to just how he is. And how he is something that we have, lofty though the comparisons are, compared to The Rock before. So, yeah, that does come across, but it's not new for him. It just has a slightly different swagger to it because he is babyface now. He's in a top program now. Kind of remarkable that not only is he a babyface in a top program right now, but it feels like this program's been going on for 6 months. It's probably only like 3 or 4 months. Definitely at least 4, because they were feuding in October. But that was like such a pitiful feud between guys that just weren't factored in at that point. And now it's still going on and it's a top thing. And this guy never turned. He just suddenly was being presented as a babyface for the War Games build after the 2.0 rebrand. And the crowd was wild for him tonight. I mean, you know, with this crowd, it always is what it is, and you have to take that as for all the different warts that presents and different things that we can't take from the crowd because they are who they are and they're there every single week. So that gets that becomes a different beast. But, I mean, they were wild for him. And like you said, he's just such a natural heel, and he's so good at getting people to boo him. So the fact that they are so on his side coming out of a really pitiful stretch and not having turned is remarkable. But I am optimistic, especially, you know, for the same reason we need to see it all pan out. But it's just, there are main roster eyeballs on this show every week now, where before we weren't certain and we were almost positive that it was not the case. At least eyeballs that matter when it comes to the final decisions. As for Loomis's part of it, it was ultimately just a match, but it's not me saying my usual, oh, it was just a match, because these are two characters that we have come to care about in different ways on the program. Regular viewers feel certain ways about Loomis and Waller. So seeing them clash, even if it is just a match, you still have a lot of personality in there. And as for Sarov getting involved, I think I'm on the same page as you guys. I'm not opposed to it, but it also seems like weird timing. Like, did he really need this right now? And because Sarov is a big guy, I'm now wondering how much of the act is going to focus on him more than Waller.
And if they want to make Knight a babyface, they did do him a solid in the back here, and this could have come off so cheesy, but he pumped up Chase University, which is a little weird because they're heels more or less, I think. And he just kind of spoke to them in their language, said, I got a teachable moment for you. And then he happened upon Briggs and Jensen. They didn't know where Grayson was either. And he said, all right, well, you two guys kick some ass tonight. You know, these things could have come off as so pandering, but I was like, well, I can't say that this part of this isn't working. Then he goes to the ring. He says, yeah, 3 times. And I'm like, uh-oh, it's all going to fail because he's not going to be able to hold himself back and people will turn on him. But we'll see. He's such an enigma. because I think if he had like about 50% more self-control, I'd never worry, but he doesn't seem to have it. So just make him a heel. Darrell, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad that y'all did say that, because this was a little main. It wasn't a little. It was so main rostery, it didn't make any sense. If you go back and look at it, he said, yeah, 8 times before he got in the ring. He said, yeah. So he was so catchphrasy. It was crazy, even though it didn't kill the moment for me for a second. But if he come out next week and say, yeah, it's done, and that was just so then I, when he said that, yeah, 3 times soon he entered the ring, I was like, oh my god, this this so catchphrasy. I can already see the shirt on WWE shop right now. I can see it coming out Friday. Yeah. So that was it. But after that, that was probably the best part of the only good part to me of the show outside of, because I said I want to stick with the good, outside of the face-to-face interaction of Bron Breakker and Legado de Fantasma.
Santos Escobar.
So I love that moment, hoping that they build that slow. But those two was the only good anything portions of the show to me. How did y'all like that face off and story building? I hope they slow build that in so we can get more. And that should bring more talking segments out for Bron and give him a little taste of that and let him work on that a little bit more in the character work. How did you think about that?
There were a couple other things I kind of liked too, but looking at other segments, I'm like, ooh, there's some real iffy stuff on this week too. But that's what we kind of expect on this type of NXT. I thought this face-to-face worked well. I thought that this was the feud. You know, if you would ask me to go through the roster and see who's available for feuds and then ask me who was going to get Bron Breakker next, I probably would have come up with Santos Escobar, because on one hand, who else? But it's funny how it kind of took me by surprise this week that that Escobar just essentially called his shot. And they gave us 2 scenes of this. I continue to believe they're using Breakker in a way that mostly hides his deficiencies. But when he starts talking, he decides he's got to start yelling, and it's like, you're not even saying a yelling line. You don't have to yell that line. But Steiner gonna Steiner, so he's Steinering, but what are you going to do? But, yes, so Mackenzie Mitchell, poor Mackenzie Mitchell, can't get through an interview because somebody's going to be – why would they even leave the door open? You lock the door, but they don't do it. And, yes, every interview, by the way, was, interrupted tonight. All of them. 4 for 4, maybe 3 for 3. But yes, talking with Bron Breakker, Escobar shows up, and then later we get a second helping of this. Escobar tries to get involved in the tag team match, Blade and Enofe versus Legado del Fantasma. By the way, 7 matches tonight. That's the only one won by babyfaces, Blade and Enofe. In 3:16, they go over Legado in what was more of an angle than a match, which I guess I'm fine with in the first round of the Dusty Cup. It just doesn't bother me. So we got 2 helpings of Escobar Breakker here. Very excited to see how this shakes out and how long they let this simmer. It seems like they're allowing things to simmer a little longer. They don't have to throw a ton of special shows at us for stunting against direct competition, which I like because I just want it to be a good TV show in the meantime. And this, a match at the top of the card, hopefully they can drag this out at least a couple months. And I wouldn't even have thought of that 6 months ago. I would have said, we'll be lucky if this goes 2 weeks before we see this, Tom.
Yeah, not much here. I mean, I think Braun is doing well. I agree about the promos, although like last week's promo was really good. For as basic as it was, but it was a good like championship run commencing statement. But overall, or not overall, but like in cases like this, it's like, okay, take it down a notch. And unfortunately it just blends into a show where the acting across the board is just terrible right now. Speaking of, you got Electra Lopez walking in. But yeah, I mean, the Santos Escobar feud makes sense. I could easily see it as Escobar's last feud before going to the main roster, because it really feels like he's got to go to the main roster. Legado del Fantasma hasn't been about him in quite a while, and I'm right there with Durrell. As much as I like the guy and have found him to be very promising, even when I see him on screen, I'm like, Legado, and then it takes me a while to remember what his work name is. But this was another, this was the other thing where they were leading to a six-person tag after Blade and Inoue lose to MSK next week, I think. Then we're going to get the Blade, Inoue, and Breaker six-man against Legado del Fantasma. That's just what they're doing. I am fine with how this match went. I guess I don't mind that they so blatantly, like, if you're paying attention and you see these MSK and Wild and Mendoza in that backstage segment beforehand, which also horribly acted, well, by the MSK guys. The MSK guys were terrible.
Less terrible than Wild and Mendoza. They were terrible, no doubt. But they were definitely less terrible. I thought Wild was mugging in a way that was almost a little embarrassing. I'm like, dude, you've done such better work than this.
Okay, I'm not going to rewatch it, but I guess I would have to. In my memory, Wild did okay, but
race to the bottom.
I will take your word on that, because like everybody was terrible tonight in that regard. So I'm probably just forgetting, since this was earlier in the show. But those two teams have wrestled so much, and it's not unlike NXT to do been there, done that. But it was so like both teams were looking past their first round opponents that it was obvious that Wild and Mendoza were not going to get past Blade and Inoue, and they were gonna and the babyfaces were gonna get an underdog win. And it was clean-ish, I guess, because I don't know. I told myself I wasn't gonna nitpick this, because what is it even worth? Like, the heel interfered, and then the heel team lost, so the babyface win is justified. But it's 2 weeks of Blade and Inoue getting not entirely pristine wins. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, and they really, really telegraphed it. Like, they laid it on thick at the beginning of the day. Legato talking about, we'll see you in the second round. And and then, like, we're definitely winning. And I'm like, if this was a horror movie, this is, I'll be right back. I mean, that is what is happening right here. And then the match starts. And then Wade is produced to say, well, I mean, obviously they're going over. Well, he didn't say they're going over. That would have been Booker T.
I know, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do.
Booker T would have said, they're going over. They're strapping a rocket pack to his back. They really gave this away, which is always too bad. But it's really too bad when it's an underdog win. Because you can't get excited about it, because they've told you that it's coming. And yes, I too think it's too bad. I like Blade. I love Inoue. And I think that these guys could have a decent future. I have no idea how they're going to shake out from a character standpoint, because right now they're just young dudes who can go. and they're fiery. They're very straightforward. They could just be that. They could just be a fiery babyface meat and potatoes team. But it seems like there's something more there for Inoue. But he's just like, I'm so zeroed in on him. He's my new Tyler Rust. Don't take that to mean, and Tyler Rust is still my Tyler Rust also. And he's in the main event against Tom Lawler on New Japan Strong this week. So excited. Tom Lawler is the champion of New Japan Strong and has its own singles championship. And Russ Taylor again is going up again. I'm so excited, Tom.
Ooh, yeah, that'll be something. I can also tell from the I'll be right back reference that you are ready for our movie question this week on NXT 8 Years Back.
Yep. I'll be right back. Yes, Matthew Lillard. Thank you. Let's go to Darrell for, I don't remember if he's got one or two left. Let's just throw to him and see what happens.
Yes, sir. Now it's time to talk about. Now, if this is, what NXT is supposed to be, then you got to talk about. If you, right now, I don't think, even though we talked about the good and some of the people, I don't think none of these people could be a draw or by just because how they do this show and what they do on this show. Because right now, NXT, to me, as a person who watched NXT since the Hulu days, even when it used to come on the Sunshine Network, if you went, Tom, I think you were in Florida, right? So I think you remember that's before it was NXT when FCW came on the Sunshine Network from time to time. With everything that they're doing, like if you go and you type in NXT on Twitter, Facebook, or any Reddit, the first few things you will see is things about races and stuff like that, like naming Walter Gunther Starks after a Nazi U-boat captain, the straight humiliation and changing of Sheree's character into a Japanese schoolgirl who's wearing a chain of a sun around her neck and talking about showing video of flights, I guess, coming from Japan or whatever. The way they treat people of color, the more tone of the show is going to just, I guess, promoting big, either big white guys or super blonde, tan white women. You can't get no real story over if the only thing people talking about your show is this and this weekly, and especially this week. I don't know how they can continue on with this show and what they do. It makes you want to see the show fail at all because in WWE itself, they only have two draws, and that's Roman and Brock. And if this is NXT, they don't, and this is what NXT is supposed to be, they don't book anybody like Roman and or Brock, because if they did, LA Knight wouldn't be so much catchphrases. He'll tone that down a whole lot and be a whole lot different, and it will catch on a little bit more and draw more people in. But going to the bad, how did you guys feel about when they did that with Sarray and made her into a Japanese schoolgirl with glasses and a fun chain around her neck and things of the sort like that?
So it is amazing how little growth that Bruce Pritchard shows over the course of a lifetime. Like, we seemingly have finally kind of graduated past evil foreigner gimmicks where, like, literally the only thing bad about them is their culture is different. Seemingly we're mostly past that. But I've said that before, and then they threw it at us hard when they went from the awesome SmackDown 6 days in like 02, 04. And then they brought in Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree. And they were just like, they were evil because they had culture. And we're not quite there anymore. Taking these people of other cultures, other races or not in these cases, but other cultures, and then promoting their culture is kind of a one-size-fits-all presentation. Like with Saray, I would believe me, I'm very interested to know what kind of input she had, if any, what's going on with her, because on the surface, this is the most obvious character that you could give somebody like that, a white man could give a character like this. And if that's the takeaway, then I think that you have to say, well, maybe we shouldn't do it then. If this is the most obvious thing that somebody who is not of the culture would give her, that might not be ideal. Which is why I think it's important to know if she had any say in this. But they even had the shot of her symbolically giving up the gear, hanging up the boots. I think she literally hung up the boots just in case anyone missed it. Like It's Always Sunny, where they literally pass the torch for the few people who have seen that. But I think it's I would love to be able to say that nuance comes later, because sometimes it does with these characters. But I don't want to say I don't want to be a guy who says let it play out, because when you let it play out, it's usually bad news in WWE. I mean, that's become like the meme on Twitter, like let it play out. Always when people are the things people are defending the most vehemently have no end game. They just are dropped. I am not as negative on this show as a whole, but I think that a lot of these performers are being put behind the eight ball, or they're being given. I've never seen a character that was from the outset had as low of a ceiling as Wendy Chu, like ever. I can't think of a character out there that, well, maybe T.L. Hopper, the plumber. That might have had a lower ceiling than Wendy Chu. But Wendy Chu, person who's sleepy all the time and lays on a blanket, like nothing has a lower ceiling than that. I won't even call it a failure when it doesn't hit. I'll be like, well, this is the height of what this was ever going to be. And she's great in the ring, so I'm pulling for her. But, I mean, come on. This is a big question, which is why I'm kind of bouncing around ideas here. I think very, very few people – you illustrated it yourself, I think, Darrell, that they only have two draws, and that's Roman and Brock, and that's probably mostly true. But I think that goes to show just the level of worker you have to be a genuine draw. I think other certain matchups can be draws, and I think a couple of the women are very close to being draws on their own, Becky maybe. But there aren't a lot of draws on the main roster, so you wouldn't expect any on NXT, let alone several. So seeing what you have with those workers, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me that there are no obvious draws. I think Braun has a chance, as currently shown, to be that. But to be an actual, honest-to-God draw, it's so few guys in wrestling have ever been that. So I don't know where to take that part of this. Tom, if I have left anything to pick the bones from, go ahead.
Oh, handled very tactfully, and I appreciate hearing all of it as well. I confess that until now, I didn't really think anything of the new outfit Saray was wearing. I just thought, oh, she's not an empty vessel anymore, not because of her clothes, but because she was actually speaking to us as a person. And maybe it's to blame that I've just been watching too many Japanese both movies and anime lately where all the female characters are in schoolgirl uniforms because that's what they wear all the time in these movies and shows. So I just didn't even think of it. Although, admittedly, anime is also very guilty of playing to stereotypes. So maybe there's that as well. But yeah, my initial takeaway was Sarai had nothing before. She was just a flat line. And now there's a little blip. So, okay, I'm just worried that the necklace is going to become a mystical object like Undertaker's urn that she's going to start using for her Hulk-ups. So that is my primary concern there. But yeah, you are absolutely right about Pritchard. This does feel, after hearing you and Darrell out, you're absolutely right about him. I've never been able to figure out how to phrase my appreciation of what he does because it always, I think he's had enough successes and I think he sees things that have potential and then tries to bridge the gap between potential and success. And he attacks it in a way that tends to work for Vince McMahon and for Vince McMahon's product. But of course, I mean, fill in my own blank. You guys, anybody listening to this is already thinking of where that then goes because it all ends up being tinged by racist caricature and stereotype. So, it's like how, I don't know, I guess I won't harp on that anymore because I'll just, it's just, you covered it so nicely. I know you're probably, well, no, you're, it's, no, do I want to accuse you of trying to get me going on Wendy Chu comments? That conversation will come. I liked what I saw, but I agree with the fact that characters like that have, the fact that characters like that have a low ceiling and should not be on big shows, so it's almost baffling that you would give someone that character. However, I'm in the weird place where, on principle, I feel that way, but when I'm watching someone like Wendy Chu, I enjoy it. And I know you don't agree with, well, I said the conversation was yet to come, but here I am. I know
it's
you don't agree
really.
With
I mean,
Orange
she
Cassidy.
Was, yeah. No, yeah, that's not the same.
No,
because one's a gimmick and one's a character. Yeah.
And okay, that's an interesting distinction. I think it's totally similar to Orange Cassidy, whom I enjoyed in the context of independent wrestling. One of my favorite matches in, what was it, 2019, I want to say, was him versus Gentleman Jervis, which I brought up on this show before, where Gentleman Jervis literally rocked him to sleep, and then the referee sneezed after the two count, so Orange Cassidy woke up and didn't get pinned. So there is a context in which I do enjoy that wrestling, but then you put Orange Cassidy on a big nationally televised show, and it's just like, no, this is now a total joke, and it's making a joke of anybody who wrestles with him. And Wendy Chu, again, agreed on principle that that shouldn't be a concept that enters pro wrestling, but from where I am sitting, I at least enjoyed it the same way that I enjoy Orange Cassidy personally, and I did feel like the sleepiness thing worked in the sense that in the exact same way that Orange Cassidy's apathy works into the way he works his matches. So that will be a very interesting character to track, assuming it continues to pop up as it did again tonight in its cameo sense that it was doing before getting more a match. As for people who could be draws, I mean, I say all the time, I don't know how often I say it on this podcast, but I say all the time in my daily life that Brock Lesnar is the only real draw left in wrestling. And that's, you know, yeah, if The Rock came back. But, you know, or it, I mean, there's even an argument to be made. Well, here I am poking holes in my own. Like Rock and Cena and whatnot, those are all people who are doing something else and coming and would be coming back to wrestling. The only person who is a wrestler, and that's like the main thing they're doing, who is a real draw anymore in 2022, and it's been this way for a number of years now, is Brock Lesnar. And Jarrell seems to suggest, at least, I don't know if he would agree to that extent, but at least some agreement with that conceit in his setup here. However, while it's really difficult to peg anyone with the future Brock Lesnar tag, I just scanned down the NXT roster, and I picked out 17 different people that I feel have potential. Not to reach that level, but somebody who could do something that would inspire somebody to tune in. So not being a difference-making draw, but being a reason why somebody would watch Monday Night Raw.
I can't tell if you're done or not because you were cut in and out a little bit. We good?
Oh, well, I mean, am I good? That's a good question. I honestly didn't know whether I was going to be done until I was done with that sentence, and I just decided, I guess I have nothing left.
Cool. You were coming in and out right at those seconds. So, yeah, and it's always interesting. Listening to old school wrestlers talking about drawing is always very, very annoying. Rip Rogers, listening to him, you would just think that wrestling had no chance, but it's doing real, real well. It's so big, the question of a draw, because when I was a kid, it was genuinely stars that drew. And now I'm a grown man and it's companies that draw, and it's people who I go to Twitter. People will, they will tattoo that company's logo on their arm. And it's all about the company. And the second somebody leaves the company, they were never good enough. And fans are so fickle. I'm not going to say WWE isn't concerned with making a draw, but they do understand that the company is the draw, and all you have to do for them is to be able to perform. They're the New England Patriots of professional wrestling. There's a system. You go into the system, you perform in the system, and it kind of doesn't matter. Brock Lesnar is your Tom Brady. He's your quarterback. As long as he's there, it kind of doesn't matter what everybody else does, what level they are. They're going to be fine. I hope enough people who are listening to this understand what happened in football for the last 18 years. To get this reference. And maybe that doesn't make them the good guys, the WWE, because they're not. But that is kind of their approach. It's they are the star, and if there are stars in the company, that's fine. But they're more concerned with the brand being the star, which they got away with for a while. But now that competition is nipping at the heels somewhat for the first time in literally 20 years, now their deficiencies seem a little more obvious. Darrell, that was an awesome question. Thank you. We probably took it so much further than we had to. If you have one more, go ahead. And if not, either way, we'll be going for the last bits here.
I just say this, I got your question. I got your thing about the New England Patriots. But I would have to say this, it would be good to say New England Patriots now, because obviously it wasn't the Patriots system, it was the Tom Brady starting years. They kept them that, and now it's been proven to be that, especially after they got blowed out this past weekend. And you can see that the coach really wasn't – he found his Brock Lesnar, and when he lost his Brock Lesnar, his dominance goes back to who he was when he was with the Browns and all those other teams beforehand. So, and talk about competition, the other show don't have a Pat Mahomes. So, to say it's not about stars anymore, people who can draw, it would probably be different, because as you can see, you move to Tom Brady to Tampa Bay, and now Tampa Bay is the New England Patriots with a system that looks like can go and do whatever and not fall, and you can put anybody in. So, yeah, I get your hope. I caught it. But I'll just leave you guys with this. You guys are the optimists, and that's what I'm going to call you guys, the optimists. So to be optimistic and selling your optimism off to somebody like me now, who now I'm done with it, why should someone continue to believe in the things when I was just on the one if they don't, and then going off of what we were just speaking of, if they don't play right with people of POC and stuff like that, why should I look at the decent parts of certain people, like a Bron Breakker and stuff like that, and not just go ahead and try and just really stick into the negative of the negative things you see from them when you don't see, when they don't, when people who look like me or other people or stuff, they give us all the bottom of the barrel type of stuff, and you don't see anybody like a Bron Breakker type getting any type of stereotype isms put on them and what people would consider star-making stuff, because I'm pretty sure when Bron, the reason why Bron Breakker wouldn't be a draw on the main roster, because first of all, he got two names, and one of the names is Bron, so they're going to probably strip him of that. So when he come in, he's going to be Breakker. And now you got the whatever following that he has, you're gonna piss them off and run them off, so no word of mouth to even make him into anything else. And now he has to build from scratch and things like that. Or one of the girls from Toxic Attraction, they'll have to lose one of their names or something like that. Now the character is all messed up. But, you know, why – help me with this, because I'm not a person who on either shows anymore a bandwagon or just rip a heart, because the other show they used to be they used to compete with on Wednesday definitely don't care about what they do and things of the sort, and it just making it seem like it's just a straight toxin, is a straight toxic. So how would you sell your optimism to me when that's all you see, and then week by week they continue to show and prove that that's what they're all about? And that's all for me.
Thanks again for one more big picture question. Man, you showed up this week. this was, to put it bluntly, I don't know that I would try to sell optimism to you. And my optimism is, I'm not going to say manufactured, but it's definitely a choice, because I'm doing this every week. And if I'm not optimistic, this will destroy me. I do not like Bruce Pritchard. I don't like his approach to things. I think that for every great idea he has about the business, he's got bad ideas about how people that don't remind him of himself should be portrayed. That's always been true. That's always been a problem with this company. And then you got Laurinaitis, who is like the consummate misogynist, that like everybody who's been real close to him has kind of spoken in code about. And so we've got stuff like Mandy. And I'll be very blunt. Last week, when Mandy had that poolside interview, my feeling was, this is worth firing somebody over. She's been there for years, and if that's her best offering, she is worthless. There's nothing there. And I was like, I saw the writing on the wall when she was becoming champion, but she didn't really do anything good to deserve that. And as champion, she hasn't been good. And she's had her moments that have been less terrible, but you would expect that. Her performance last year, I would never have held her on. With JC Jane, I would certainly be careful because she hurt herself somewhat on that Tope Suicida, a move that almost everyone should stop doing, because if you can't do it safely, it's really, really a problem. And even when it hits, it usually looks like crap. It's basically your double whammy of it doesn't look like it hurts, but it does. When what you want is it doesn't hurt, but it looks like it does. And failing that, it should look like it hurts because it does. That's the second best thing. Sell optimism to you, partially because I don't have any to sell, even though I am about certain things. And also because I do understand that you want representation to be more positive and you see it backsliding with who's in power. And the second we all gathered that he was in power, which to me was immediate, I think that became kind of a problem. So I don't know. I don't want to hammer on Bruce Pritchard anymore just because it's a broken record at this point. But I guess the main reason, if I was going to try to sell optimism, it would be in the form of I'm almost positive it's better than it used to be. It's not as good as it was a handful of months ago, but it's still better than it was by far than 20 years ago, even with these clowns doing the creative. And I guess the optimism is that one day he will die. Tom?
I have nothing further to add, as a matter of fact. I think Darrell, Ed, you made excellent points as well, but I think Darrell made some really, really great points that I will just let stand on their own without the obligation of my response.
Let's go to some emails. This one is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. During Wade's Raw post-show, Cam Hawkins set the NXT Women in the Rumble under over at 9. What do you all think of that? Who are your top picks for NXT Women making a splash in St. Louis? On that topic, I don't think the men will see half as many entries. Any obvious entrants, or could this be an NXT free Rumble for the men? I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I'm taking the under. I'm taking the way under. I wouldn't be surprised if there were none. I cannot believe Cam is watching this show and even coming up with the idea that 9 of them could be featured in the Rumble. There is no way. They will go, I think with things as they are, they'll go full bore on former wrestlers. I'm expecting more Mickie James type things than I am NXT at this point. I think that NXT now, if they really, really want to take it to the way it used to be, in 2013, 12, 14, 15, you didn't even consider that NXT might have anybody in the Rumble. You just didn't. It was not in the cards at all. They did it in 2013 because they did a mini tournament, an 8-man tournament at Fan Access, which Bo Dallas won, and then they had him the next night, and he eliminated Wade Barrett, and they had their little mini feud. But that was it. I'm not sure I'm expecting any. With the women, it's just harder to say because who else is going to be in that match if not? I wouldn't be surprised to see Mandy in it because she has been main roster. So there's that. She is the champion. So there's that. But she's terrible. So I don't know what to think. Tom?
Better than, is Kelly Kelly going to be in it this year? I have the graphic up in front of me, but even I can never recognize her when I'm looking at her. But anyway, there are 21 women announced for the Women's Rumble this year, so Cam's over-under is the exact number that would fill up the rest of it. So it's probably going to be under that. But I do expect that they are going to draw from the NXT shelves to fill out 30. As for the men, I mean, I've been saying Cameron Grimes, but then they've been doing like personality packages on him, or they did one anyway, that I saw. And then, and he's involved in some, in the North American title scene again. So, that seems to poke a hole in that. You know, he could always just show up and get eliminated, and that's that. And then we don't hear from him on the main roster again until his call-up and or until next year's Royal Rumble. And they've done that plenty of times with a whole bunch of different NXT wrestlers. But he was my pick, and I'm not feeling as confident about it anymore. Escobar was another one I was looking at, but now probably even less so with him since he's involved as he's the de facto number one contender right now. So, yeah, I'm not sure for the men, honestly. But for the women, I definitely expect to see some representation.
This is from JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Do you guys think that it's possible that Bruce Pritchard and the team see Walter as a big money player in NXT 2.0 and not just a holdover from NXT? I get the feeling that they respect Roddy, but see him as a guy that will be used to get the 2.0 talent over. I get the feeling they see Walter as a potential big part of the main roster in the future with his size and presence. I could actually see them potentially building to a Walter Breaker NXT title match, which I could see really helping Breaker further develop and get over, even in defeat. Also, my early prediction is that Walter will make an appearance in the Royal Rumble and get the Keith Lee treatment from a couple of years ago. Love the show and go VIP. Also, to Tom, a few weeks ago, you dropped an I told you so comment about the Tony Khan Big Swole controversy. I think that it is only fair to address WWE trademarking the name Gunther Stark, who was a Nazi military commander, and seemingly giving it to Walter, who after his match said that this match was won by Gunther. If that isn't completely insensitive and tone deaf, I'm not sure what is. Oh,
just
mama.
Regarding that, all I'm going to say is that if AEW gets something wrong, that doesn't mean that WWE is getting it right.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to say that. I will always say that if you're doing it right, you don't have to compare it to the other guys, and you shouldn't. Just get it right. Yeah, that's that's some garbage. That is some real garbage. That was a bad name. Now it's worse. Okay. I think here's the double-edged sword. That's terrible, but they must like him because they like him enough to trademark a name for him, to change a name that literally has been his whole brand. They're willing to change that in order to give him some sort of a push on the main roster or otherwise. But this could be a real embarrassment where you have somebody big on your hands and you try to, Jesus, I'm sorry. At a Nazi military. Tom, go ahead.
So in general, regarding whether Walter could use a character, I'm going to say maybe. Does he need one? Absolutely not. Wade Barrett said on commentary tonight that every single time the man steps into the ring, he is an attraction. And that isn't BS. That isn't Wade Barrett blowing smoke. Walter is exactly that. So he doesn't need a character. Maybe he could use one. Maybe he could use a more overt hook, especially for wider audiences. That Bruce Pritchard touch, that part of the Bruce Pritchard touch that I do appreciate, except when we start to imagine all of the different ways that it could go horribly awry. Here is Walter, who was a member of a group that I don't know who named it, but somebody chose to call it Ring Kampf. And we just took it in stride because, you know what, even though Hitler named his book Mein Kampf, that doesn't mean that he owns the word. But he also doesn't own the style of mustache, and he was such a horrendous person that when we, like, nobody wears that style of mustache anymore. And even when somebody as famous as Michael Jordan tries to, it gets shut down real quick. So there are certain things that, like, yeah, it's just a word, but I feel like Walter and the others involved in that faction, who are European whites who come from whose characters are that they are superior, who come from countries that are historically famously associated with fascism, even if they aren't currently. It's the kind of thing where we have chosen not to, we've chosen to let them move past, not to think about. These are things that I'm thinking about, and they're things that, how do I want to phrase that? They're things that are in the background of what this faction always has been, even pre-WWE, but they haven't brought it into their characters, and so you just sort of go, all right, well, Kampf is just a word, and fine. But now they're focusing that much more in their promos on how much naturally better they are than everybody else, and you have Walter, whether it reminds us of Sergeant Schultz or Augustus Gloop or whatever it reminds us of more, it is a much more recognizably German name, and you could totally imagine that he's going to start coming out in a military uniform or something. Not that that's necessarily what's going to happen, but it is the first thing that springs to mind when I think of how they could differently present Walter. Yeah, I think it's something that at first I was like, well, wow, they're going to want to be careful with that, especially because there's already somebody on the roster with the last name Stark. But it's not just that you don't want – it's not just that you want to be careful with it. It's that we've said you probably shouldn't be naming people Escobar and Gacy. I don't care if he had the name Gacy beforehand. You probably shouldn't be naming people after – famous serial killers, Joe Gacy being one of the most famous, and Escobar being someone who's responsible for millions and millions of deaths. Just don't use those names. And so it's not a matter of, oh, they need to be careful treading that line. It's that just by invoking the conversation the tiniest bit, you've already overstepped the line. So yes, I agree. It's totally concerning. I don't know. I don't even want to correlate it. I was stopping myself from saying I don't see it as analogous to the Big Swole issue, but I do feel like they are totally different issues. I didn't want to like even tie them together in the conversation. But it is a different issue. Both need to be addressed. This is not, I don't know. Yeah. Now I've reached the point that you reached where I'm just throwing my hands up. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, when everybody's being terrible, it's not just the most terrible one that needs to answer for their actions. Everyone does because they're all being terrible. Oh man, I cooled down kind of. thanks for taking a minute and doing that. How hard would it be, Tom, to not use names of horrible people, real life people? Like, you can invoke the characters. Everybody knows what you're doing. But then to, like, hammer it home with Gacy. People who are alive now were affected by Gacy's murders. It's no good. It's no good.
And it makes the characters seem more false.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. More and more gimmicky. I mean, that's supposed to be an indie thing. It's like historically, that's what indies did to try to capture as many eyeballs as they could at a time where indies didn't get the kind of the kind of fame that you got on big arena shows. They did it because they had to, not because that was the right way to do things. Oh, ick. Speaking of not the right way to do things, Brooks Jensen, worst actor of all time? I think it's possible.
He was at least the best one in that segment.
He was easily the worst one in that segment.
Where is that? What did I write down? I'm trying to find it in my notes. I wrote down something like the script was terrible, but at least he tried.
He did try. He failed. Oh, man. It was bad. It was so bad. They didn't give him anything good, but man, they just set him up to fail. Creed Brothers,
oh,
go over Briggs
and Jensen. I'm sorry. You know what I actually wrote?
What's that?
Wrote, terribly scripted, but Briggs especially did well with it.
Oh, thank God. Tom, I was like, we can't talk movies anymore because you don't know what the hell you're watching. yeah, Jensen was painful. Briggs actually was a beacon of light in the darkness in that scene.
If you actually want to talk movies, the thing I forgot to say about Harland earlier was that he was obviously replicating RoboCop in the way that he walked through the trainer's room. Like, there's no other way. There's no way that wasn't what he was trying to do. He looked like Alex Murphy.
Yeah. Oh, RoboCop. Peter Weller could act, but he was in RoboCop, and he was like, I'm gonna take this movie off from acting. He's more robotic early on when he's a human than he is when he's RoboCop. He's just phoning it in. And he can act. Oh, my God. Anyway, Creed's go over Briggs and Jensen in 534 in a match that I actually really, really dug. Old school, cutting off the ring, heels occasionally cheating, heat segments. Tag team wrestling doesn't have to be hard to be good. And this was nothing special, and I also liked it a lot. Creed's go over Briggs and Jensen on their way to absolutely 100% winning the tournament. Dante Chen versus Guru Raj. Duke Hudson breaks this up at 57 seconds, and the match is thrown out. I had forgotten about Dante Chen, even though I liked him his first time out. Was liking him here. I really like Guru Raj. Definitely had not forgotten about him. I thought that this segment raised all of Chen, Raj, and Hudson. Nobody wants to see a 57-second no contest. But I thought this raised all their names. Hudson needed to be reintroduced. Chen was, and he got that hype segment. And Raj, I think, looked pretty good and continues to have some good outings in the ring. Kaylee Ray versus Ivy Nile. This went 424. They had their cake, and they ate it too. Kaylee Ray is definitely next in line for a women's championship. But Ivy Nile remained undefeated, as Kaylee Ray lost as a result of some kind of contrived distraction from, God, I can't even remember her name. That's how good she is. Mandy Rose, Yulisa Leon against Dakota Kai. This was 405. Dakota Kai continues to be fairly miscast in this crazy role. Yulisa Leon, she's okay. She and Valentina Feroz are okay. I'm real glad that they got their first chance to have their first talk segment. I thought that it was nothing special, but also did not make them look like an embarrassment, which is better than some of what we've seen in the 2.0 era. It was perfectly fine. Those were the other matches, Tom.
Okay, so let's start from let's go backwards from there. Your old bae versus my new bae. Your current. The way I said that made it sound like she wasn't still your current.
Yeah, but, what the hell, man.
But yeah, I have liked Valentina for a little while, but I have loved Yulisa for a short while. She's really been excellent, and she didn't get to show a lot here because Dakota basically wiped the mat with her, but she still got that follow-away slam moment. Bridging it into the pin, and sometimes that's all you need to make an impression is just one move, like Alicia Fox with a Northern Lights suplex. So I'm glad she at least got that. For better or for worse, this is the most Dakota has played her character yet. I mean, she started from a point where I was questioning people who said she even had a new character. And so now it's like, oh, okay, she actually does have a new damaged personality. I'm so glad we got a replay of Kaylee Ray saying fo-o. I really enjoy hearing Kaylee Ray say the word fo-o. I also think it's funny that she has her bat back inexplicably after she handed her gimmick down to Cora Jade, who never used it. I would be slightly worried that Ivy Nile was the already in the ring talent, But they ended up protecting everybody. The match was just okay, and just
Walter
for...
Walter was already the he was also the already in the ring talent. Walter did not get entrance.
You may have been in the bathroom then, because he did. But
what the hell did they do it?
They like, did it before did the break.
Oh God, that's why I thought they didn't do it. Oh God, I thought they did him so dirty. Okay,
It was a little weird. I'm not used to seeing Walter entrances cut off by commercial, Kaylee Ray, Ivy Nile, really just a setup for the sixth person, which indeed got announced later in the night. And also, like with the men, has me wondering if it was already giveaway for the Dusty Cup winners, those being Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada. I don't think we know when the women's Dusty Cup is happening. They've told us it's happening, but I don't think we know when it's going to start. At least they're not running them simultaneously this year.
If it's next week, it hasn't been announced. But
yeah,
I guess they could, but at least several of the women who would be in it are already announced for next week.
Yeah, part of me is like, oh, at least it's not all at once this year. And the other part of me is like, man, Dusty Cup is so boring. Let's get it over with. And actually, that's going to have me skipping over the Dante Chen match because it's a much better pickup point for Creeds versus Briggs and Jensen. I've said a million times that I think the Dusty Cup is extremely boring, and it usually is, but this match rocked. I mean, not only did I like the whole thing, but it had two jaw-drop moments for me. And that, like, that just does – I'm so jaded. I'm sure so many people listening are. Kelly, I know you are to a certain extent. We're just jaded watching this stuff anymore. We've seen so much of it. Nothing surprises us anymore. And not only did the match end with a really great-looking descending clothesline, but I just about popped out of my seat when Briggs kneed Brutus's mouth and his mouth guard flew out, which, you know – when they replayed it, it was like, oh, okay, yeah, that was all very well controlled. But in the moment, it was a big holy crap moment.
It's amazing that you can teach the hell out of yourself in the ring, but these single contrived moments are – it's a good lesson for wrestlers over in the match. Yeah.
Good point. And Briggs, you know, I just because I said that he – seems to have lost something during the prolonged transition from being the last Evolve champion to losing in the first round of the breakout tournament. And that wasn't a case of booking. That was like, oh, I can see why they had him lose in the first round. There's nothing there anymore. What happened to this guy? He seems to have gained it back. Like, he's not great, but the pairing with Briggs is definitely working for me. I'm enjoying seeing what they do. So then with Dante Chen, I too sadly forgot about him, but they did a nice little personality piece on him. Or I guess it wasn't personality. It was just sort of like post-injury and also my dad died and that kind of thing, which hopefully they won't bring up over and over again like the MSK guy. But I already killed all my points on this because they were about thinking Guru had been released. Yeah, I guess I fall in line with where you stand on it, so I echo those thoughts. And part of me was like, oh, no, they changed Duke. And then I immediately was like, oh, no, this has to be a temporary thing. He's way too cool. He's way too good at feigning a cool confidence to change his character. He's just angry right now because he had to shave his head, and that's what's going on.
Okie dokie. This is from Al in New York City. Kelly and Tom, you still have the best for MLW after being cut from the main roster? Yes, absolutely. I thought they brought a lot of value in the type of team they were. Tom did not like them at all, but I think Tom would agree with me that it's kind of surprising that they weren't signed. ROH champ Jonathan Gresham said Deonna Purrazzo is the best wrestler, male or female. Is Deonna NXT's biggest miss? She didn't even make it to main roster catering. WWE dropped the ball big time on Andrade. He is a huge talent. And then he sent us a picture of Sergeant Schultz. So he must have been listening live. Yes. Is Deonna Purrazzo the best wrestler, male or female? No, but she is very, very good, and she is a hell of a miss, And she looks like, well, I don't have to say any more words.
I have previously, as a joke, put pictures of her in the podcast group chat, and it's just ground us all to a halt, and we don't know how to continue.
You did that to me while I was talking on a podcast, and I forgot English. I was just like, I know I've said words before, but suddenly I don't remember what any of them are. Yeah, it seems like a pretty big miss, Deanna. I don't know how you can mess up Deanna Purrazzo. They brought her in, they jobbed her to everyone, and then she was gone. And I was like, I remember thinking there was kind of something there, even though they didn't really feature her. Then they brought her in, they kind of featured her, they still jobbed her to everyone. I don't know how you see her, how she can work, what she looks like. She seems like somebody that in the previous NXT or this NXT would flourish, and yet they didn't keep her. It just blows my mind. It blows my mind they did not have a place for Deanna. Is she the biggest miss? Maybe. Solomon Crow is right there, Tom.
Solomon Crow is the other name that came to mind. So I'm with you there, and obviously with you on everything you said about Deanna. Authors of Pain, I thought, were terrible from the beginning. And I just always thought they were terrible. So for that reason, surprised. I don't know. Like, as soon as they disappeared, I just stopped thinking about them because I didn't want to anymore. So I can't say I was surprised, but I guess thinking about it, it does seem like Impact or MLW would try to get them. But that sounds like an insult to Impact or MLW, but you know, come on. But a very quick Google search pulls up nothing post Monday Night Raw for AOP or either individual member. So I don't know what they're up to right now. Like, usually on 8 years back, I can do a quick Google and be like, oh, Mojo Rawley is hosting a podcast for TMZ right now. But I do not know what Akam and Razar are up to. So it might not have been due to lack of desire from other companies. It might have just been their, in my opinion, very obvious from the beginning, not natural desire to be a part of what they were a part of.
That part I agree with. I actually thought that they brought value to a tag team, like to a deep tag team roster. They are an extremely valuable heel gatekeeper team, like the unbeatable team that always gets beat, the Kane of the tag team division. I thought they could be really good at that. But I, too, thought that they looked a little bit blank and didn't give a whole lot of Fs. So, yes, that is our emails. That is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I believe that is our show, unless we're missing anything. I mean, Tony D'Angelo did his memorial, and, you know, it was brief. The picture of Pete Dunne got broken over Tony D by Cameron Grimes. Carmelo Hayes said that Cameron Grimes and Tony D'Angelo could have a singles match to determine who is the number one contender. One guy, one dork in the crowd started chanting triple threat. And I'm like, they suck. So no, just to have a match and have the match lead to the other match. No need to do the triple threat that allows so much protection and so much stalling from one guy. And a lot of broken up pins, which are, man, three broken up pins in a multi-man match, and my brain leaves. It just totally leaves. Oh, boy. And then we had Solo Sikoa with some really, really impressive scar makeup from the fireball that got into his face. And by next week, he won't have to have it all, but it's amazing, folks, from one who was required to take the stage makeup class, how real you can make anything from a bruise to a burn
just about anything look with makeup. So what I'm saying is that chick who had the big, what was her name? Jillian Hall, who had the big thing on her face. There was no excuse for that looking so fake. Tom, anything on that segment?
Jillian Hall with a big thing on her face.
Jillian Hall? Yeah. She was the wrestler who she showed up and she was she was beautiful, but the gimmick was she had a great big giant wart on her face. And she was a heel because she was almost pretty. And that's Bruce Pritchard, man.
Is she the one who was a bad singer?
Yes, and that stuff was hilarious. She had it like she was a bad singer who wanted to be a famous singer, and they brought her into the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago, and she was honestly one of the memorable points of it.
That's right.
Yep, that Billy Kay was trying to
giving
resumes to team up with somebody in the Rumble, and it was Billy and Jilly, and Jilly loved it. Yes, honestly, maybe the best thing Jillian Hall ever did in WWE, and she did it without a contract on a one night only appearance.
So no sarcasm regarding Sokoa's makeup then.
No sarcasm. It was very, very impressive. Not kidding.
Wow. Okay. I thought it looked terrible. I will circle back to Walter and say that if they're going to keep doing subtitles for them speaking in German, and I have not paid close enough attention to know if Eichner is speaking Italian to them and they're just going along with it, or if he's also speaking German. But if they're going to keep on doing subtitles the way they're doing them, they need to start putting something in the corner that says that this took place earlier in the day, because the full subtitle appears before they are done speaking. It doesn't work the same way closed captioning does. So just giving up the goat there, is it giving up the goat or giving up the ghost?
Ghost.
It is ghost. Okay, I said that, and I was like, that didn't sound right.
It hurt me, but I was like, I'll file it away.
I never use that phrase. So on the Walter subject, I enjoyed Bivens saying, you want a bunch of matches in Europe or whatever. That's just Bivens trying to let his personality out in this weird, like, serious promoter character that they've given him. And I guess that just leaves the D'Angelo segment. I thought it was funny that the memorial photograph was of Pete Dunne shrugging and not even a particularly good photo of him shrugging. It looked like an outtake. I thought it was hilarious that if you noticed the CGI gravestone on the Trons, it had Pete Dunne's T-shirt logo engraved into it. That was very funny. And then it seemed like Tony D'Angelo forgot half of his script, or just got out there and was too cocky and was like, oh man, I should have studied better. Because it seemed like he forgot a lot of what he was supposed to say. He got through it. He got through it. But it seemed like, I don't know, like maybe it was something else. Maybe he was just stumbling a bit. But it seemed like he was forgetting where he was and really wished somebody was out there to help him out. When he started listing off other people in the mafia, I really feel like he should have just kept it at Jerry the Hat, because Jerry the Hat is a hashtag. Jerry the Hat is a potential trend. Then he starts listing off all these other people, and it's like, well, now I can't focus on just one. We don't have, you know, this isn't Left Shark now, when there are only two up there and you're looking at the left one. You could have just left it at Jerry the Hat and then let the internet go crazy, which in all likelihood would not have happened, but it was a possibility. So I was definitely worried when they announced this that it meant the continuation of D'Angelo versus Dunn as a singles feud, because all very due respect to Pete Dunn, but everything he does feels stale if it runs for more than a few weeks. So even though Grimes shouldn't be on NXT anymore, I appreciate the addition of Mello and Grimes. And with Mello, one of the talking points around him lately has been that he has gotten better at he's very quickly gotten better on the mic. So it's a question of, like, does he even need Trick there anymore? But I still really like what Trick is bringing. And I don't know if every time Mello briefly gets thrown by Trick interjecting something, doing his whole hype man bit. I don't know if that's Melo really getting thrown and having to get himself back on track, which he does in a split second, but you still see him look over like, man, I got this. Or if we're supposed to be looking into their character relationship, which reminds me, I didn't answer the Joe Gacy question from earlier. Oh, no, I didn't because I agreed with you. That's why I didn't. So I'll just echo your thoughts again.
Cool. Yeah, with Tony D, I think that I think, folks, it's possible that I was right all along and he's just not very good. like everybody's kind of souring on him. And I'm like, yeah, he was kind of showing that at the beginning. And like he's mildly
to keep him
grew face. On me. And I guess, yeah, like he mildly grew on me and everybody soured on him. And it was like, yeah, he was never good. So
who else could we have put in the War Games match? Because they only turned him heel to be in the War Games match, even though the babyface character just caught on immediately. Do I still have the roster page up? Nah, I closed it.
I don't know. Solo Sikoa.
That's exactly who came to mind. That's yep.
Yeah.
That's I thought it at the exact same time you did.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought that he was certainly good enough to be in it. He's a lot more interesting than Tony D'Angelo, but at the moment, D'Angelo was hot, and no surprise that Pritchard thinks that that's a genius character, because no effort was put into it at all, like none. So, you know, Goodfellas. All right, done. I'm going on break. The nicknames they gave people, you only get to do a lot of them if you're in a movie. And I'm going to get the papers. I know them all from Goodfellas. Or
I thought of
SNL. I'm Johnny Big Balls. I got Big Balls.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I thought of Magnolia when Philip Baker Hall is playing. Oh, wait. No. It's I got it backwards. It's Hard Eight when Philip Baker Hall is playing Sidney and Samuel L. Jackson says, you know, yeah, I knew all the cats, you know, Jimmy Gator, Floyd Gondoli, and those names ended up being the characters that Philip Baker Hall would play in Boogie Nights and Magnolia.
Oh. Oh, boy. I don't know if I knew that happened. But now I do, and I'm going to go down a rabbit hole after the show, folks. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Tom.
At Tom Staup, and I didn't know tonight's episode was going to be so heavy, but hopefully we juggled it.
Yes, it... Did you do that on purpose?
Oh, no, what did I... What? I
was talking about balls, and you talked about heavy and juggling, and I thought about Snoop Dogg. It doesn't matter, folks. It doesn't matter. We are out of here, and thank you for hanging out. I hope you didn't hang out for the last 2 seconds of this, but we will see you in 7 for another weird but certainly conversation-worthy show. All right. Cheers. A bizarre ending, but there are so many of those.
I'm still waiting for the thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know. I'm not sure why it did what it did. As far as I can tell, we recorded, however.
Excellent.
It was a long one, way longer than last week.
Oh dear. And us saying we didn't want a long show with a lot of nonsense. But I also, I don't know, maybe it's my own.
Well,
my head has been.
Darrell had two really good long form.
Oh, they're excellent questions. Yeah. And honestly, like his second excellent question, I wasn't even viewing it as a question. I was viewing it as a statement, and I was just sort of nodding along. It was like, oh, well, I guess I'll just let that speak for itself, because if I said anything now, it would just be obligatory. Like, oh, I am also on the show, so I should say something now. But yeah, I guess it's just because my head has been so in other things lately, as I've vaguely stated to you over and over. I've just been so ridiculously busy lately with both professional and personal stuff. And I wasn't anticipating such a heavy, like multiple instances of heavy subject matter tonight. And like, shit, I've had those thoughts about what is now called Imperium since before they were in WWE. I was like, really? They're calling
Ring
it that?
Con.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's just cool with it. Okay. I guess we've decided to be cool with it. And after all this time, there's finally a reason to be like, oh yeah, that's been in the back of my mind. Guess I should have said something before, because now I'm just bandwagoning.
I don't know. Did I lose you?
No.
No.
Nope.
Okay. Yeah, thought I did. I loosened a cable and then I didn't hear you, so I think it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
Oh well. Yeah, it was
alrighty.
Fun as always. And tomorrow is Wednesday, which means we have a show.
Yeah, you good? Okay. Good.
Yeah. I don't have any reason to think I'm not.
I will be busy, but I will squeeze it in as usual, even though, you know, as we learned tonight, things are so heavy and large.
This is the bonus content that anybody who hasn't hung up is all about. This is why I don't end the episode, even though I've stopped recording. This is the stuff that people are listening for.
Oh, yeah. This is where we make our real money.
Yeah, squeezing it in, folks. Tweet me at Spooky Milk and ask me why the hell this is happening.
Oh, dear. Okay, what do we have on 8 years back? Did they announce anything?
Oh, God. I never remember 1 week to the next. I don't remember modern shit 1 week to the next. I don't know why I'd remember old shit a week to the next. I try. I mean, what I remember from last week is Sidney Poitier. I don't know. I mean, what are the women doing? There aren't many of them, and they aren't doing anything.
There weren't any on our last episode.
That's right. I don't know. We'll probably get a Mojo match. We'll probably get a Big Cass match. Mojo, Big Cass, and Mason Ryan. Triple threat.
We are due for those.
A 60-minute triple threat Iron Man match between those three guys.
And then we talk about Scream afterwards. Oh, dear. a movie subject where I can almost certainly say I'm going to be brief, and I know I've said that before, but I'm pretty damn sure this time.
Yeah. I've seen them all, but I've seen the first one, I don't know, 5 or 10 times. The second one, I'd say 3 times. Third and fourth once each.
And none for the new one, I imagine.
Not yet. I had every intention of seeing that in the theater. I feel like I know where it's headed.
Yeah.
It's directed in such a way that it has to be, the story has to be what it is. But I'm interested to see. So.
Well, I'll talk with you about it tomorrow.
Cheers, fuckface. I don't know why I went Terrence Villip on you. It just seemed like the thing to do.
Yeah, and you took the good one. I was like, what other quote fits here? Yeah, I don't know. I'll just see you later.
Hi, Brooke Shields.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Hopefully.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you in 12 hours, man. See you.
Yeah, bye.